Welcome, friends, it's the Movie Boom Podcast. Enjoy the show. Zachie and Brian are talking about movies. Movie Boom Podcast on the radio.
Welcome to Movie Film. This is episode 133, brought to you by Mr. Boy Productions. My name is Zaki Hassan, and on this first day of Daylight Savings Time, I am joined by Brian Hall.
Hey, good morning.
Is it the first day of Daylight Savings Time, or the first day without Daylight Savings Time?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, Daylight Savings. I don't know this. I'm going to sound like an idiot by actually trying to answer. Is it because the adjustment is made just for the summer, and we have to call it something? Is it refer to what we do during the summer where we adjust the hours?
I truly have no idea. I just know it has something to do with the farmers.
Yes.
And, you know, I think it's a huge inconvenience. We're messing up our whole calendar for the sake of these farmers. What have farmers ever done for us, ever?
Isn't it funny? We're like munching on corn. We're like, oh, no.
What are you doing? Let me tell you. But it is nice to be, you know, it's weird actually, because as I've gotten older, I prefer like the daylight earlier and the sunset sooner, whereas when I was younger, I liked the opposite.
Oh, that's interesting. I still get a little depressed when I because of the adjustment, but when I walk out of work or look out a window and it's 5:30 and it's dark, I'm like, oh, really?
See, but for us, that's great, because that means at like 6 o'clock, I can be like, all right, kids, go to bed.
That's funny.
It's dark, you know, because otherwise, like during the summer, it's, you know, the sun doesn't set till like 11:45 at night. Right. And, you know, you're like, go to bed, and you can like, the you know, they're like sleeping and there's like kids outside. You can hear them playing, you know?
Yeah.
But it's nice, you know. I feel refreshed. I think we gained an hour, although I don't know if that actually is how it works, but you know, it feels like.
Yeah, this is the good one. This is the good one.
This is the good.
Yeah, because we got up like a little early, relatively speaking, to do this, and I was like, okay, it's kind of early, and I went to go make my coffee, and the microwave hadn't been changed yet, and I was like, oh, well, that doesn't look as bad, like what it actually is in my body chemistry currently.
Well, there we go.
Yeah.
Speaking of your body chemistry and taking things in, you imbibed all 10 episodes of Stranger Things too, didn't you?
Yep. I just hooked them into my veins and downloaded it. Yeah, I did watch it in two settings. This time, I think first season was 8 episodes and this one was 9 episodes.
9 episodes, okay.
Yeah, and I binged. It's so funny because I was like, yeah, Stranger Things, that was like a while ago. It was like only a week. But it's just funny how these, especially with these Netflix shows, when they drop all at once, it becomes this immediate event kind of thing. And then it's like, yeah, you know, instead of like sort of doling it out, like the season is beginning, let's buckle down and enjoy the fall. It's like, nope, like Saturday, Sunday, did it.
That's really funny.
Yeah, but yeah, man, I just love this show. I really love this show.
There was a lot of excitement for this show. I mean, I you know, people were like counting down the days.
Yeah. I think the first one, we talked about it even before it hit, where we were excited because it just looked like it was a part of that pastiche that we just love of the films that we grew up with, like Amblin films. And then sure enough, it totally hit, became this, I don't think Netflix could have anticipated the hit that it became. The fact that I see shirts and soundtracks and things for it all throughout the year, like the Funko Pop things, for this kind of unassuming Netflix show that takes place, you know, at a time period. And I don't know. I don't think anyone could have guessed that it would have hit like it did. And so, yeah, it was with much anticipation that the season 2 returned. I remember there was even a trailer during the Super Bowl this year.
Wow.
And it was the trailer I was most excited about over any of the other films. And I have to say, I really feel like they did it. I feel like it was a really great sequel. I read a lot of interviews with the Duffer brothers who created the show and write and direct. And they were saying they really studied sequels and why do they work. And I think they hit it on the head where it felt familiar enough that I felt like I was going back to the thing I wanted to go back to. But they also found new things for the kids to do, but they didn't go so far that it felt like a different show. Like, I just really feel like it's like this tightrope walk, and they really did it. And all the things that you love about it, sort of these unfolding mysteries that sort of get revealed throughout the season, we're back and fun. The characters that we love are back and fun. And I thought it's, you know, I don't want to get too into it to spoil it, because you have not seen it, right?
I haven't even seen the first one.
Okay. I would be very curious what you would think of it.
You know what? Now I'm not going to. It's too popular. I got to keep it indie.
Right. Speaking of indie, a lot of Indiana Jones references. No, that's kind of the thing too, where I think in first season you could almost go through and go, Close Encounters, E.T., da-da. Uh-huh. Like, you could, and I think for me, I enjoyed it, and I felt like they did enough of their own thing that I enjoyed recognizing tropes, but I felt like they did pull off their own story. Whereas I know some people might have complained that they leaned in too much to those sorts of things. And they even had this little meta line in this season addressing that, which I actually thought was kind of cute. Huh. And then this season leans into Gremlins, and it leans into Temple of Doom, and it, you know, like the sequels, Empire Strikes Back. And I don't know. I feel like it's like I said, it's a delicate dance, and I feel like they just really figured out how to let people like us notice those things and be delighted by them, but still not sacrificing the story that they want to tell. I don't know. I guess if I could sum up my whole thing about Stranger Things, is it's this really delicate dance, and they did it. So I had a lot of fun with it.
I'm looking forward to, at some point, getting to it. That's, you know, it's the list of TV shows I need to watch is at this point, I don't think I have enough hours left in my life. Yeah. the math's not working, you know?
I think for you in particular, I would put this higher up on the list.
Okay.
For sure.
So I should put off that Full House rewatch.
Yes.
I should kick that down the curb. Is it something I could watch with the kids?
That I don't entirely know. You might want to preview it
because
a little bit.
I need someone to blame is what I'm saying.
I think this one, like I said, like this really does feel like it could have been released in like 85 or something, like a Goonies kind of thing. But it does step into horror a little bit more than those Amblin movies did. And I think and we always say we're not big horror guys. And I think I like how much this one leans into it, because it's just enough to make it kind of creepy and scary, but it never goes like full on horror film, gross kind of whatever. It just adds this fun undercurrent of creepiness. But there's like, you know, a monster, and there's some things that are a little, especially toward the end of season one, I think they get a little scary. So I don't know, actually. I might be something you want to preview, but
okay.
Especially, I mean, your oldest, I think, would be the only one that would probably be close to being able to watch it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. My oldest right now, we're watching Escape Plan.
Oh, funny.
Which is the Sylvester Stallone prison movie, you know?
Oh, I saw you comment about it. So, okay.
Yeah, it's I mean, he's now, you know, going on 11, and I'm like, all right, he's kind of, I can gradually start watching a few more of these R-rated movies. And this is very funny because, you know, we're watching it, and he hadn't seen the trailer, so he doesn't know that Arnold is in it also.
Oh, funny.
And then so about, you know, maybe a quarter of the way through, Arnold is introduced, and he's like, oh, Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I'm like, how many 11-year-olds say that? Yeah. And so there's a scene where they start brawling, and he's like, Rocky versus the Terminator, best match ever.
Really?
I'm like, that's my kid right there.
Wow. You know what? He might like Stranger Things then, because it is like all 80s all the time.
I'm just waiting for him to go to school and be like, yeah, so I watched Raw Deal the other day. Like, you know, it's totally these like 1980s movies that no kid would ever, you know. Did you guys see The Running Man? You know,
like Tango and Cash. These ones, right? Like, we don't even talk about anymore.
He's quoting Tango and Cash, you know. Yeah. That's really funny. Well, I have not seen as many things. I have had some fun encounters in the last month. You know, that now that the end of the year is approaching, the nice thing about being part of the SF Critics is we start getting to meet and greet with various people who are being courted for, you know, awards exposure. So I got to meet Holly Hunter in the last month.
Yeah, yeah. I want to hear about this. I saw the pictures.
So this was for The Big Sick.
Oh, right, of course.
And not for Batman versus Superman.
Right.
As far as I know. Although you know, I was so desperate to be like, would you share a glass of Granny's peach tea with me when I met her? But
she'd be like, I will cut you.
Yeah, like I didn't know how she'd take that. So. But she was just delightful. I mean, she was holding forth on a variety of topics. It was very funny because initially the way these things work is it's usually at the Ritz or whatever, and you know it's you know, you have the whole group there, the critics group, so you're looking at about, you know, 15 to 20 people, and then gradually the crowd starts thinning, and by the end it was like me and two other people were talking to her, and she's like, hey, y'all want to sit down? And then we're like, sure. And we're like talking politics and just having a conversation with Holly Hunter about like the political situation in the world right now. Wow. And that's one of those moments where you step outside yourself a little bit. You're like, she was in Copycat, you know? Like,
Copycat, yeah.
Yeah. So that was interesting. And then a week later, Andrew Garfield was back in town for Breathe, which is the new movie directed by Andy Serkis.
Right.
And this is another meet and greet. And I introduce myself, and he's like, I remember you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's like, yes, I remember. You gave me that gift 2 years ago because, you know, two years ago when I met him, I had told him I play the video of him doing a tribute speech to Spider-Man. I play that for my students. I'd mentioned that to him, and he was quite moved. And he actually remembered that from 2 years ago.
And then he even still refers to it as the gift.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Oh, that's so nice. He just seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, really. You know, so that – I never disliked Andrew Garfield, but definitely that was something where I was like, wow.
Yeah.
He remembered me.
Yeah.
That makes him a good person. That was my conclusion after that meeting.
Meeting, you know, famous or not, just meeting thoughtful people is like a really pleasant, almost surprise.
It's true.
You know, and so it's nice that these people that you encounter that we, you know, they do this thing that we all love and kind of admire and look up to and spend time to discuss. And just, you know, knowing that they're thoughtful people doing these things and enjoy engaging back. It's just, yeah, it's a nice thing.
It's a little thing.
Yeah.
But it ends up going a long way. So the movie is Breathe, like I said, and it's based on a true story thing. I'm sure you'll be hearing more about it as it gets closer.
Yeah. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it.
Okay.
Actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can't comment on the specific content of it, but I know they're pushing it hard for some kind of Oscar consideration.
Mm-hmm. And is this Andy Serkis's directorial debut? Did you say that?
You know, he, I feel like he did the Jungle Book prequel first.
Oh, so that's in the can?
And that's then like they're sitting in a drawer somewhere. Yeah.
Ah, okay.
I believe, don't quote me on that, but I'm fairly certain that this is not his first movie. Cause I feel like that would be more the conversation.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So, that was fun. And that, you know, now it's screener season. I don't know if you've had this happen, but screeners are now arriving for all the awards consideration movies.
I don't know if this is a funny story or not. We can cut for time if we have to, but, I was in this, when I was working at Bob's, they put me in this, ASIFA, which is like the animation sort of guild sort of thing. And so I would get screeners for this, but now that I'm not at Bob's anymore, they're not going to renew my membership. Oh. And so I was thinking like, oh, crap, that's going to run out soon. I hope I get some good screeners like Coco or something like before that runs out. And then the other day I got one. And I was like, oh, okay. And I saw I had like 2 days left till it like runs out. So I was like, what is it? And I opened it up and it was Despicable Me 3. I was like, oh.
That's like the first worldiest of first world problems.
Oh, right? Totally. Yeah. Now maybe I sound like kind of a douchebag. But
they sent me the wrong free movie, assholes. That's really so. You don't get screeners this year, is what you're saying?
No, I'm gonna have to rely on the kindness of other people in guilds.
You're one of them normies now.
Yep. Is this what it feels like?
I don't know if we can do this show anymore, Brian.
I know. Zachy! And you like shut the iron gate on me.
Just click. I just click off.
Yeah.
And block you on Facebook.
Yeah. And I can hear Breathe and whatever other movie playing.
In the background.
Life is the greatest gift of all. Or some sort of inspirational Oscar movie dialogue. It's like it's the warm electric glow. Actually, it's the cold electric glow filters from your windows.
Oh goodness! Yeah, there's some fun stuff coming up though. I'm definitely it's weird though because like for me, the issue is not going to the theater. It's finding the time to go. You know.
Yes.
So it's like that's still a problem even when I have screeners at home because I can't be like, oh, come on, like, kids, let's watch, you know, They Killed My Father first or whatever, you know, that that Angelina Jolie movie, you know. But regardless, we do have some headlines to talk about, but do you want to take a little break first before we do that?
Yeah.
Well, we're back, Brian, and lots of headlines to discuss.
Yeah. A lot going on these days.
Things have been happening. The ongoing sexual abuse scandals do not seem to be in danger of abating anytime soon.
Yeah, it's sort of like unsurprisingly / sadly.
It's almost like a new section on the show. Like, all right, well, who's been implicated this week?
I know. It's sort of disturbing because. As new ones arise, then you get all these hands being lifted into the air like, yep, me too. And you're like, oh, wow. Like all these people that you just had no idea were just sort of sitting on this thing. And now that the moment for some reason has been chosen for this to be revealed, all these people finally have their time to say these things and air these out.
The fact that they've been sitting on it for this long.
Yes. I mean, for decades for some of these people here.
Yeah, I mean, that's well, and obviously the latest thing, what we're talking about, is Kevin Spacey.
Right.
This all came out because of the actor Anthony Rapp, who currently is appearing on Star Trek Discovery. He gave an interview to BuzzFeed where he very matter-of-factly talked about how in the 80s, when he was 14 years old, Kevin Spacey, who was in his mid-20s, propositioned him and would have had his way with him had he not escaped.
Yeah.
And this is one of those things where it's – You know, I don't know about you, but I mean, I'm assuming you know that there have been, it's been sort of an open secret that Kevin Spacey is gay for decades at this point.
Yeah, and it was sort of disappointing seeing his apology or confession or whatever you want to call it coming out, but just because it felt so insincere where he used that as the opportunity to be like, yeah, all these things are being said and I'm gay. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, The two are not connected except in his like he came across like a Kevin Spacey character.
Yes, like Frank Underwood.
Yeah, you know, very sort of manipulative, you know.
Yeah, but in a completely transparent and not well polished way at all. I was very pleased because when I saw that I was like, that is the most hand wavy, gross, you know, thing. And then to see immediately glad was like, no. This is not a coming out story. I was glad to see him called on that like immediately.
Yeah, I think it was Billy Eichner who tweeted something where he's like somehow Kevin Spacey found the one terrible way to come out, you know.
Yeah that was kind of
But it's the blowback has been immediate. I mean, Netflix, first of all, they were like, well, House of Cards is canceled. We were already going to cancel it, and this has nothing to do with this. But now they've actually suspended production of the currently filming sixth season.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sure looking like Kevin Spacey has been fired from the show.
Yeah, it's funny because when they first were discussing it, they were saying, you know, okay, this will be the last season. And I was surprised that they weren't just going to outright cancel it. I don't know if this is, I'd heard people say that they were going to cancel it anyway. So it didn't seem like they were really doing anything. But then
yeah.
It sounds like they halted production, talked to crew to see how they felt about it. And then there was crew from House of Cards that were like, oh, yeah, yeah, we've been harassed
yes.
by Kevin Spacey. And so then they just immediately shut the whole thing down. So.
So he's a serial predator, that much we can say, based on at least the allegations that are surfacing.
Yeah.
It's pretty. I mean, I read at least one person, I think, spoke to Vulture under anonymity, but described in sort of gory detail about what happened to him when he was like 14. And I'm like, this guy's sick.
Yeah, I know. It's, man, you know, I don't know. It's just so unexpected.
It's weird, too, because I'll tell you, American Beauty is about a guy lusting after his underage neighbor, mm-hmm. who is a girl, and he is very much not gay. Mm-hmm. So it's like Bizarro Spacey. Is that what that movie's about?
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, it's like I always want to couch when I say this. Like, ultimately, this is the worst thing for these victims. You know, and then for us,
it's sort ridiculous. Of yeah.
Standing on the sidelines, you're like, oh, well, like I liked Kevin Spacey. Like, I liked the movies he made, and it's like all his movies now have this like sick whole new thing.
You know, it's
put on them, and
I'll tell you what's crazy is in one of my media classes, I screen L.A. Confidential. It's one of the movies that we watch, mm-hmm. and we split it up in two. So it was like we watched half of it, and we went away for the weekend, and then this story broke.
Really?
And we came back for the second half. Yeah, for the second half. And I was like, this is crazy, because like their context of that movie would be entirely different had they finished it before.
Right. Right.
You know, like a few days earlier, and then this news breaks. But it's like literally right in the middle of the movie, this comes out. And, you know, it's a plot point in the movie where you have this guy who is in a position of power who uses his influence to get young boys for sexual favors. And one of those boys gets killed, and Kevin Spacey's character has like a crisis of conscience because he could have prevented that.
Hmm. Wow.
And that there's like this whole new context that makes that arc just deeply ironic, if nothing else, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
but,
I mean,
he's been,
right.
It's good that it's coming out. It's good that people are being called to account.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's, like I said, he's been fired from the show. We don't know what's going to happen, but his career is collapsing collapsing like something.
Yeah.
Anyway, House of Cards final season may or may not air. So.
Nice.
Thank you. Speaking of a controversial actor and the franchise he is associated with, this is news I did not expect to hear, that Lethal Weapon 5 may be in development.
So, yeah, I saw. I mean, it's enough to actually make a headline out of. But is this? You really think this is actually being considered?
Well, from what I'm reading, Mel Gibson, Danny Glover, and Richard Donner are in talks with Warner Brothers about possibly doing it.
Okay. And
now, obviously, in talks can mean a lot of different things.
Yeah, because this pops up every now and then, right? Talk of this.
Right. The last one came out 19 years ago, right?
Wow. Okay.
So crazy. So yeah, think about that for a second, right?
Yeah.
But they've been kicking it around for a while. If it were to happen, it would be, you know, a package deal. They've apparently got Channing Gibson, who wrote the fourth Lethal Weapon movie, on board to write the script.
Okay.
But do I think it would actually happen? I'd be shocked if it actually happened. But it does feel weird, really, you know, because here we are. I mean, certainly you and I were Lethal Weapon fans, and to me, it's a little like, you know, when this new show came along, it's like you get, you know, it's like your wife was lost at sea, and then somehow you find a way, you know, you come back to dry land, and you're like, you know what, I'm going to move on, and then you find a new love, and you build a life together.
Yeah.
And then your wife shows up the next day and is like, hey, I'm alive again. And by the way, I'm really anti-Semitic now.
Right, right. They want to hang out and, again, you know, have more adventures?
Yeah. And it's just really, it's really uncomfortable and awkward. That's what I feel like right now.
Yeah.
With this news. I'm a huge fan of the Lethal Weapon movies. I do not want to see a fifth Lethal Weapon movie.
No, I don't either.
You know, it's weird too, actually. I mean, while we're talking about Mel Gibson, because, you know, he's front and center for this family comedy, Daddy's Home 2, that's coming out in a few weeks. And I'm like, have we forgotten, like, everything that he's done in the last 10 years? Like, would we just sweep that under the rug? Like, I'm almost okay with him, like, with the Hacksaw Ridge and all that stuff. But, like, this is a family comedy.
It feels like a really surprising, weird wild card to be like, well, let's see how this works out for this big holiday comedy. Right? I'm a little surprised. I mean, it, like, X amount of years ago, of course, it totally makes sense, him playing that hard scrabbled guy or whatever. But now it just seems like, why would you? What a gamble.
Yeah. Pre-racist phone call, maybe that would have been an option.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, we haven't even brought up the obvious with Lethal Weapon 5, but the Lethal Weapon 1, the plot was that Danny Glover is, like, confronting retirement.
Yes.
And this is, what, like 30 years later or something?
Yeah. So I mean, it's weird, actually, because let me ask you this. Were there not a TV series right now, mm-hmm. would you be more intrigued by this possibility?
I mean, there's always – this is sort of almost like Indiana Jones.
Give me the Brian Hall line.
Well, I was going to – what is that? Oh, I'm always down for the good version of it. But I was going to say, this is kind of like the Indiana Jones 5 thing, right?
Yes.
Where it's like, is it a good idea? Probably not. But if it were dangled in front of me, like, well, yeah, I'm going to check it out. You know, like so there's a part of me that's, of course, a little curious because I like these characters and seeing them in new adventures is always enticing. But at the same time, you have to sort of know when enough is enough and be like, you know, let's just kind of leave it where it's at.
Know when to hold them and when to fold them.
Yeah. Know when to walk away. Know when to run.
There you go. Whether Lethal Weapon 5 does happen, here's another franchise that, I don't know, maybe has stuck around a little bit too long.
It's beginning. Is it? Are we alone in feeling this way? Well, actually.
About Fast and Furious?
Yeah.
I'm kind of done with Fast and Furious after the last one. Like I said, once Dom Toretto won a face off with a nuclear submarine, I was like, okay, I think we may have lost the thread a little bit here.
Yeah, but it performed, right? I mean,
it made $1.2 billion.
Man, part eight.
I mean,
crazy.
Think about that for a second.
Yeah,
there's you know. That's like the GDP of a small country.
That's crazy.
That was delivered to, again, Dom Toretto facing off against a nuclear submarine.
And how many franchises can you say right now, or how many, you know, for a studio, what do they have under their belt that's going to actually produce numbers like that? And if you have that thing and it's still doing that, I mean, why would you stop?
Well, and I got to say, if they can make the drama on screen for the next two movies match the drama behind the scenes, I think you've got a potential Oscar winner.
This is a weird story with Tyrese Gibson.
It is. Why do you say it's weird, Brian?
I think it's not uncommon for there to be behind the scenes feuding between actors and filmmakers and whatnot over thises and that's. And sometimes you get these sort of like reports are indicating that such and such is unhappy with so and so. But this one, you have Tyrese going straight out onto social media to all his millions of followers and being very emotional and kind of appearing slightly unhinged. Having a breakdown a little bit to people.
There's two things happening. Number one, he's in a custody battle with his wife for his daughter, which is, he posted a video about that. I don't know if you saw that, but it was heartbreaking. I mean, my gosh.
Yeah.
He's talking about how he hasn't seen his daughter in several years. And that's, that to me, honestly, I look at that and I'm like, as somebody who, I mean, I have no dislike for Tyrese. I'm like, dude, like, don't do this, you know?
Yeah. That's kind of what I mean. Like, it's, just seeing like a grown adult sort of like this is what I imagine, you know, kids do when they squabble at school or something and they post some video they regret and take it down later and whatnot. And just seeing this grown man sort of engage in this sort of what seems to be slightly unhinged behavior.
It's well, and so connected to that, I mean, the backstory here, we talked about this a month or so ago, is that he was upset that Dwayne Johnson is doing the Fast and Furious spinoff movie first before the 9th Fast and Furious movie comes out.
Right.
And Tyrese is like, you know, I got kids to feed and, you know, don't do this. Right. And I think most people are like, you've been in like 7 of these movies.
Right.
Put like the salary from one of those in a drawer somewhere and you should be okay.
Right.
I don't know his finances. I do know that he bought a life-size Bumblebee statue.
Oh, really?
Like the character Bumblebee from Transformers, which to me, I'm not an expert, but that seems like maybe not a good use of money.
Yeah.
Seems to me, right?
Right.
So I'm going to say sell the Bumblebee statue.
Yes, that's a start. That's a start. You know, that's good.
That's my advice as a friend.
Yeah.
That being said, so he was upset. He first said to The Rock, don't do the spinoff. The Rock said, I am in fact doing the spinoff, mm-hmm. Tyrese.
Publicly. He's doing this publicly over social media.
That's right.
Addressing The Rock, yeah.
The latest Instagram post was, I'm sorry to announce that if Dwayne, that's Dewayne, is in Fast 9, there will be no more Roman. Referring, of course, to his own character, Roman Pierce, in the Fast and Furious movies. Which, to me, Brian, this is sort of like Jeremy Renner being like, listen, if Robert Downey is going to be in Avengers 4, then consider Hawkeye gone.
Right.
I think that Jeremy Renner's trailer would be off the lot before he hit send on that post.
Yeah. And for someone who's claiming that they need the money, why are you really publicly pulling yourself out of work? It just doesn't.
I mean, I've said this to you before. If it's a choice between co-lead of the franchise and driver number 7, that's not a choice.
Yeah.
Again, Tyrese, as a friend, your negotiating position is not great.
Yeah, that's why I couldn't even watch it. I saw the video and like the screen capture, and I was like, I can't watch this. Like, I don't know.
Now, that being said, the crisis is over, Brian, because they have reached a compromise. Here is Tyrese's latest post. He says, "Want you guys to know, I had a real heart to heart with one of Dwayne's associates, and this will be my last post about him. I repeat, my last. I respect the associate who called. My story will never change. I was never DJ's co-star," DJ being Dwayne Johnson. Justin Lin is back in the driver's seat, by the way. That's a bit of news. Mm-hmm. And that's exciting because it's going to feel like the true hashtag Fast Family all over again. When we see Justin, we see Paul. So one of Dwayne Johnson's – I feel like he got worked over by one of Dwayne Johnson's associates. Doesn't it sound like that?
Yeah, sounds like beat into submission a little bit.
Like somebody's standing over his shoulder while he hits send on the post.
They're treating me well here. Yeah.
Right. The food is good, you know?
Yeah.
So this is just, again, I truly feel like the behind the scenes story is so much more interesting than anything that's going to happen. But I'll tell you something. The one person who's ecstatic about all of this has got to be Vin Diesel, because remember all the stuff about like a feud between him and Dwayne Johnson?
Yeah.
Like, ain't nobody talking about that anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, so, okay. I hadn't heard that last one. So he's like, everything is good. Like he's going to be in. Okay. Well,
we're all fine here now. How are you? But the news is that, Justin Lin is going to be back for Fast 9 and 10, along with Jordana Brewster. So there we go.
That was such a random tag at the end. What do you mean?
With Jordana Brewster, because she wasn't in the last one.
Oh, I see. It's like, speaking of random other people in this like 20-person cast.
That's right.
Gotcha.
So there's going to be two more, and then they will be done until the next one.
Okay.
Right. I mean, come on, let's be honest. The eighth one made $1.2 billion. Are they really going to be done after two more?
If the 10th one makes a billion, they're going to make an 11th one.
That's what I'm saying. They're going to be making these until Vin Diesel is putting Nos on his wheelchair and jetting around the old folks home.
Yeah.
He's talking like through like the thing that you put on your larynx, you know? Because he'll have burned out his vocal cords after talking like this.
Yeah, that
this
growl. Role.
Yeah. That's not healthy. That's not healthy, Vin.
Well, it's paying for his boat.
It's paying for Tyrese's bumblebee statue.
Yeah.
All right. One more franchise that's coming back. This is kind of surprising, to be honest. Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, this was kind of out of the blue.
So the deal here is that Warner Brothers and the Tolkien estate have come to an agreement. There was a big lawsuit going on between them. I don't know if you remember this, because the Tolkien people were saying that the Warner's folks, they were skimming off the top or doing something shady. So that was like a 5-year lawsuit. That just got settled. Now they're back in business together, and they're shopping the TV series rights for Middle Earth.
You know what? This totally makes sense.
I'm not saying it's a great idea. As a TV series.
This doesn't surprise me at all. Yeah. And especially my very first thought was, as Game of Thrones is coming to an end.
Yes.
This is the perfect time to capitalize on people's, you know, sort of appetites for this kind of story, you know, the sort of fantasy medieval thing. And because of Game of Thrones, that's where I'm like, oh, there could be a good version of this. But
now this is being targeted for Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is because Jeff Bezos had put the word out that he wanted something to compete with Game of Thrones for his network.
Well, there you go. And it won't even have to compete with it. I think if they're smart, even though this will apparently they haven't even started on this yet. Right. This is just kind of an announcement. But if
this
they were,
is like in the deal phase.
Yeah. If they're smart, they would pick up right where Game of Thrones leaves off. When it, you know, when it goes off the air.
See, but so the deal here, let's see, I'm looking at Deadline right now. So the upfront payment is $250 million just to get the rights.
Wow.
Right. And then you'd be on top of that looking at anywhere from $100 to $150 million a season.
Oh, man. I wonder if Amazon has that money. I mean, those have been stories lately about Netflix where they're like, we're going to spend billions, you know?
Well, here's why Amazon has the money. Have you ordered anything from Amazon in the last week?
I have.
Okay. So have I. So has like everyone else, right?
Yeah.
When you think about it, I mean, unlike Netflix, Amazon they're able to pay for their content by selling you, you know, toilet paper and shit.
Yeah. I thought there had been, and this is, I wasn't prepared at all to have this discussion, but I feel like they always are sort of teetering on profit.
Amazon is.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I could be completely wrong, and maybe that's a very old story, but I always thought their model is, of course, always going to sustain itself, and everyone, it grows and grows and grows, but I thought they weren't as, they're not, like, swimming in profits currently.
Sure.
Don't quote me on that. We'll have to look into that. But
now here's my question. Is this going to be a redo of what we've seen already?
Oh, like just draw out the books further?
I'm not remotely interested. I feel like we've gotten the definitive version of The Lord of the Rings, full stop. To me, that's like doing a remake of Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah.
And no snark about The Force Awakens, everybody listening. They've already done a remake of Star Wars. Huh? Shut up.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't read any of the other books. I know there's some other books, right?
There's like one book left. I think it's called The Silmarillion.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's like the unfinished tales. I mean, I'm not remotely close to being a Tolkien scholar. But to me, right, I mean, don't you agree? Like the trilogy is, that's it. You've done it.
Oh, I totally agree. I don't know that I really want to see this story again.
It's like, would we want to see a Harry Potter TV series that just does what the movies have already done?
Yeah, I can't imagine. I can't imagine fans, the people they're going after, wanting that either.
Yeah. So I'm wondering what the end game is here. Like, is this more stories set in Middle Earth? I guess that could be interesting.
Yeah, I feel like, if I remember correctly, at the end of the books, there are these long
appendices.
Yeah, exactly. It's like Samwise opened a general store, you know, kind of stuff. And, like,
and that's actually the premise of the show. Sam's store.
Yeah.
Sam's place.
It's Sam's place.
It's where people come, they drink beer, and he expresses his bigoted views about orcs and stuff, and people.
yeah, and there's like, will they, won't they relationships that we all.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'd watch that show. I don't know if it's worth $250 million up front.
Like 10 years ago, it would have been one of those talking head shows, like those fake documentary things like Parks and Rec and The Office and Modern Family and blah, 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 and The Muppets and the blah, blah. Stop making those. Sorry. As soon as I see that it's the talking head format, I'm like, nope.
Isn't that funny?
I'm like, over it.
They just burned it out.
Yeah.
You know, I think Modern Family is sort of like the last one standing right now.
I never watched Modern Family for that very reason.
Really?
I've heard it's great. I know people say it's brilliant, and I believe you, but like, I'm so annoyed. I feel like they're imitating, even if they do it brilliantly, as soon as I see the, and then I told them that I would do the thing, and then they cut to the talking head. I didn't. I'm like, okay, yeah. Like, I'm so over this humor.
Well, we saw that to some extent on Arrested Development. Not the talking head, but like the narrator critiquing.
See, I don't even mind that. That felt different to me.
Well, Ron Howard makes it all go down easy.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is, right?
That's funny that to even compare those, because I see what you're saying. Like the sort of subversion.
It's doing the same thing in narrative terms.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I never thought of it that way. So, I mean, to their credit, I didn't. Yeah. Hmm. That's all.
No, you're not wrong. But so that's a thing that might be happening soon. But while we're talking about Ron Howard, I think there is some Star Wars news.
Yeah. Should we crank it?
Let's do it.
So Ron Howard, are you following him, by the way, on Instagram? Like, he posts
a lot. I'm not. I should.
It's kind of fun. I don't know how much he's going to do now, but when he was shooting, he was posting a lot. And, you know, just sort of pictures of sets and things, and it was kind of fun. But yeah, the word on the street, the word on the playground, the word at the evaporator moisture farm, that's what I was looking for, is that Ron Howard basically reshot about 80% of the Han Solo film.
I saw that.
That's a lot. So it's almost my brother was like, it's like they made a $100 million movie and went, not this, and then made another $100 million movie. I mean, who can do that?
Lucasfilm can.
Yes, they can. Yeah, and that also recalls something else where, you know, Disney bought Star Wars for $4 billion, and it doesn't that just seem like a steal now?
It's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. But anyway, so, I mean, it's weird that there's going to be a whole version of this Han Solo movie that was almost completed that we will likely never see.
Right.
Right? I think also Thady Newton, the actress who said recently this week when she wrapped filming, that she was like, I wasn't really directed very much by Ron Howard.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. Either she's going to be in it less, or there will be decent amount of chunks left from the previous version.
I think it means she doesn't have a substantial role. That's what that means to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're reshooting 80%, then obviously things have changed, characters. I mean, who was the, I forgot already, the actor who basically was dropped from the film?
Yes, it was, I don't know, he was replaced by Paul Bettany.
Yeah. I can't remember. But,
No, it was Michael Kenneth Williams.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of a.
I think that just based on the fact that they've had to basically go back to formula, that sure makes it seem like the Lord and Miller thing turned out to be not such a smart decision.
Yeah, I mean, it completely makes sense on paper where you're like, especially for these offshoot movies, right? Like, we're going to still in the universe, but we're going to try something a little different.
Right.
But it just wasn't something that currently they felt comfortable with. I don't know, which honestly, even though it's not the exciting answer, and I do want them to do that, I do feel like it's relatively early for them to take those kinds of gambles.
to go too far off the reservation.
Yeah, eventually they're going to have to, which leads into something else we were going to talk about, where they are discussing the next 10 years of Star Wars.
Yeah.
We all knew it was going to happen, right? And eventually they are going to have to break formula a little bit. Almost like it seemed like they were teasing they were going to do before the sale to Disney with the Star Wars Detours. Wasn't that what it was called?
Yes, that like little animated show.
Yeah, like where it seemed like they're going to make a straight-on comedy that happened to take place in
and,
the Star
and
Wars
that
universe.
Show, by the way, Brian, I mean, it exists. There's like 40 episodes of it sitting in a drawer somewhere. They'll never see the light of day.
Yeah. I wonder, yeah, maybe not. I knew they were keeping them to themselves initially because it was so important that the brand come out of the gate exactly as they intended.
Right.
I wonder if that's just something they'll throw up on Netflix in like 5 years.
No, sure.
Or something.
Like, why not just make it available?
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, I guess Kathleen Kennedy, speaking about the next 10 years, she said she sat down with the Star Wars story group that oversees the direction of the franchise, and they're planning for the next 10 years, and they're saying, this is her quote, "We're sitting down now, we're talking about the next 10 years of Star Wars stories. We're looking at narratively where that might go, future stories beyond Episode 9 with, this is interesting, with the new characters, Rey, Poe, Finn, BB-8. But they're also
Which was
looking,
the question I had about
yeah.
they were going to continue on. Yeah.
But she also said, but we're also looking, you know, interested in taking it even beyond places they haven't gone yet, so.
Hmm.
But yeah, we wondered if they would, sort of like how they've brought Luke and Leia and Han into this. I mean, will they still be the main people? Will they be people that come in and out of the stories as new people come in? And how do you continue this battle against this empire? I mean, how do you satisfyingly end Episode 9 and make it feel like a complete story, but then keep it going, knowing you know it's going to keep going?
This is the thing, right? Because and maybe this is something that'll be more clear when the third one comes out. But I mean, right now it sure feels like The Force Awakens. The Force Awakens feels like it didn't do as much story wise as it could have.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Totally.
Like, you know, it, and so I wonder if when all is told, if we'll feel like, man, what a missed opportunity that they sort of tread water for this one movie.
So you're saying if Last Jedi comes out and then they finally kick it into gear into something different, we will look back at Force Awakens a little
bit. The Force Awakens.
Where it was
yeah, because
of
The Force Awakens
a
is... Yeah, a little bit, right? Because it's so much of it is sort of playing the same beats from the original movie.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if it'll feel, in hindsight, like a little bit of a missed opportunity.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, you know?
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see them all together.
The saga will continue, and you know, we talked about Han Solo. It's crazy to think that, I mean, the Han Solo movie is like 6 months away.
I know. Yeah.
Right?
Man, I would not want to be in post-production on that movie.
Ron Howard's famous even-keeled persona is going to be put to the test over the next, you know, yeah. as the ramp up to release goes.
Yeah. But looking forward to it.
Yes, of course.
And you saw the latest TV spot?
I did. This is crazy. Series? You'd think they would have put this in the trailer.
What, the new footage in it?
Yeah.
Like Luke and the Falcon?
Yes.
Yeah. That was funny because my parents, I was like really charmed by this. I was driving home. My parents were like, "Did you see the new trailer? It was during the World Series." And I was like, "No, I didn't." And they were talking about, you know, this and that. And I was like, yeah, like Luke and the Falcon. And whatever. It was really fun, like being able to sort of talk about this with my parents.
It's interesting. You see Luke Skywalker in the Millennium Falcon. You're like, we haven't seen him there since The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, yeah. Someone made like a Photoshop of that where they put sort of transparent Han and Leia and 3PO with him there. I was like, oh, that's really cool.
That's wow.
Yeah.
That's exciting. It's going to be hard to like stay away from, you know, clips and everything else over the next 6 weeks. I'm going to do my darndest, though.
Yeah, I still feel like they're doing a pretty good job of not showing us a whole lot.
Right.
Which I appreciate.
Yeah, well, it's crazy because, I mean, as a comparison, I mean, Justice League, like Warner Brothers is dropping clips left, right, and center.
Oh, really? I haven't even seen those.
Yeah, I mean, I generally don't watch clips when they're release period, but this, I mean, it seems like they're really working hard to be like, look, it's funny. You know, there's banter.
Oh, right. Yeah. And Danny Elfman's been coming up a lot.
Yeah, too. Well, like, did you hear?
How often does that happen with the composer of a film?
Well, it's interesting because they released one of the tracks, mm-hmm. and you can hear the John Williams Superman theme just in all its glory.
Yeah, which is really cool.
Which I peed a little, I got to be honest.
Well, and there's talk of him revisiting his Batman theme?
Well, they asked him, like, oh, are you going to have which Batman theme are you going to use? And he said, there's only one Batman theme.
Wouldn't that be funny? And then it's like, no, 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 no.
That's what I was going to say. Psych!
Yeah.
But I thought, yeah, I mean, he's said before, this is part of the history, we shouldn't run away from it. So to me, if he's saying that about the Superman theme, of course he would be saying that about the Batman theme that he wrote, which even to this day, I think is sort of, that's as close to iconic as we have for that character, if we're comparing to like the John Williams Superman theme.
I agree. Yeah, oh, man, that'll really do something for me, honestly, if I'm sitting there and seeing Batman with that theme again.
You will pee also.
Yes, I will.
Yes. So that's something.
There will be pee.
There will be pee. That's the next Daniel Day-Lewis movie. I don't know if that's why he's retiring, because he made that movie.
Yeah.
All right, that wraps up Star Wars news. Why don't we take a little break, and then we can talk about this week's big release.
Cool.
And we're back. And hey, Thor is back in theaters, Brian.
I know. Have you seen it?
I have seen it. I've seen it twice now.
Oh, wow.
So I am part of the $121 million it made over its opening weekend.
That is crazy. Because the projections were 115, right? So, I mean, it's even going beyond projections.
So it's outperforming projections, and it's easy to see why. I mean, critics, it is actually the best reviewed superhero movie of the year in a year that includes Logan and Wonder Woman.
Really?
And Spider-Man Homecoming, so that's really saying something.
I'm going to be honest, I find that a little surprising.
That it has a higher RT score than those movies?
Yeah.
That is somewhat unexpected, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we'll get into our discussion about it, but maybe it's whatever it's doing, it's playing into it in all the right ways. I don't know.
That sounds like a reasonable. I mean, it's the last Thor movie was 2013, so 4 years ago, which is,
wow,
you know, that's an eternity in franchise time.
I feel like we were just talking about it.
Isn't that crazy? That was fall of 13, so that was, we had like, that was our first year. We were like little babies,
yeah,
little podcasting babies.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Now the first Thor grossed 181 domestically, and the second one made 206 domestically.
Oh man!
And then so those are the totals. So Thor 181, Thor 206. This one has made 121 in you know 3 days. That's three domestically. Days.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this one is a monster hit. What that means is Thor has now become Iron Man.
Yeah.
In terms of performance, yeah.
Which is cool. I love the Thor character.
I think it's a great character. I think that, in the past 6 or 7 years, however long since the first one, Chris Hemsworth has really grown into the part. And you can say that about all of the other MCU actors. But I think he looks slightly world-wearier in this one, and I think that helps.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't look quite as boyish as he did in the first one.
Right.
He's still too handsome, which I find deeply upsetting, because I feel like when somebody benefits from that much, genetic good fortune, it takes away from the rest of us.
Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with you there.
Yeah. I think I can't remember who, but I think somebody was like, if the entire world was going to end and you were told, listen, only Chris Hemsworth and his wife Elsa Pataky can live on to repopulate the species, I'd be okay with that.
It'll be a different world, but yeah. Right. It is funny because after I saw it, Thor 1 was on like FX or something last night, and it was interesting seeing how different it was, but also kind of similar in a way. I mean, he was always kind of It was always kind of a comedy.
More so than people realize.
Yeah, yeah. It's a fish out of water thing in the first movie, and now he's more familiar with Earth, but he's still his – whatever he brings into a room and the people he interacts with, there's always a comedic element to his character, which is really – I like how with so many of these Marvel characters now, they do seem to have their own sort of shtick.
Yes.
And his is sort of like the big hulking guy that you think would be very serious, but he's kind of funny.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
No pun intended with hulking.
Yeah, very true. Yeah. So, as you said, this one brings the Hulk into the mix as sort of the value-added element.
Mm-hmm.
Buy one, get one free.
Right.
And it's directed by Taika Waititi, who did Hunt for the Wilder People last year, which you might recall I was quite, effervescent about that movie. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah, it's been on my list for the past year because of you. I still haven't seen it.
Well, I hope that you are more inclined to watch it after seeing Thor Ragnarok. Now, that being said, I don't know what you thought of the movie. So do we want to do like a little non-spoiler take before we get into it?
Yeah, let's do it. Right now. So Thor 3. I enjoyed it. It felt a little long in a way where I feel like they let some scenes breathe too much.
Hmm.
Like they really wanted this to be a comedy.
Yes.
And I think they were like, let's just like let them knock it back and forth a little bit here and just let them talk.
It definitely feels like they improvised a lot.
Almost feels like Judd Apatow directed Thor Ragnarok a little bit to me. And I realize that people are enjoying that. So I'm not going to like take away from that. For me, I was getting a little bit of that. Like I wish there was a slight more snap to the there was a moment where Kate Blanchett comes back in the third act, and I was like, oh, yeah. Like, sure. I kind of forgot she was a threat and she was there. But that said, I did enjoy it. Like, it was like a fun time hanging out with these guys. I think it's similar to all the Marvel films where I wasn't, for me personally, what I talk about on the show is like, I wasn't anticipating it. I wasn't like crossing off the days on my calendar, but going to see it, I had a good time. I had a smile on my face throughout. I didn't think it changed the game necessarily of superhero films. And then when I walked out, kind of chuckled about it and went on with my day.
See, I think what you just said is so apt, is it didn't change the game and it didn't need to.
No, you know? It's clearly working.
I think that's really, I think the appeal of a movie like this is exactly what you said. It's the fact that we are now 17 movies deep into this universe.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get to do the, hey, let's just do like two buddies hanging out as a movie.
Yes.
And you have enough buy-in because people have so much affection for the universe and the characters already.
Yeah. I think, you know, one more thing I can bring up that's not spoilery that I do want to actually readdress when we get into spoilers is something that kind of, it's like a little itch when I watch these movies, is I don't understand the characters' thresholds.
Yes.
So it's like right. They can literally, I remember this in Guardians of the Galaxy 2. There's a point where, what's his name? Batista is being dragged by the ship and he's like getting, you know, pummeled by all these trees and whatnot. And I was like, is he indestructible? And in this movie also, like, I really don't understand how much Thor can take or if he has any weaknesses at all.
Right.
Which kind of takes the stakes out of things. So it's like, are we just going to watch like a pummeling for 5 minutes till it ends? Or is there actually like a power bar for these characters where they're getting low?
It's interesting because like what you're describing about Batista in Guardians of the Galaxy, like if you watch the movie, he's got like the protective suit on. In that scene.
Okay.
Right. So that's the explanation. Cause I'm what you're saying, I was totally thinking about this and I was like, cause I'm watching the Hulk just pounding on Thor.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, he's a god.
Right.
And to some extent he is indestructible. That's why it works. Like if that were to happen to Captain America, he would be paced. So they are consistent in the sense of they've established sort of what the boundaries are. Like we saw in the first Avengers movie where Hulk grabs Loki by his legs and just flips him around, you know. So we know that a god from Asgard, that's their threshold. They can take that.
Right.
So it's funny that you said it, because I was specifically paying attention to that, but in the way of like, oh, they're like pretty consistent with what their thresholds are.
And it's funny because then we'll get into it later, but then Thor does get an injury and I was like, oh, his one weak spot. Apparently.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I will say I think the movie's worth watching just for the banter, even as you say. I mean, there are times when they let probably the jokes breathe a little bit too much, but I think that you put Hemsworth and Ruffalo next to each other and the way they're just going back and forth, I was laughing a lot.
Yes. Yes, they are a lot of fun together.
You know, I mean, just as both as the Hulk and as Banner, I think Mark Ruffalo is fantastic.
Yes. Yes. And also, this isn't spoilery, but toward the end, I mean, it becomes like redemption story for several people. And I felt that like the ending felt satisfying to me as a story. I think it was just, I wish the immediacy of some of these things had felt a little more immediate throughout, but it did come to a satisfying conclusion. Like I walked out enjoying it.
Well, I mean, this is a comment that Matt Linton, a friend of mine, left on my review, and I agree with this. He says, I feel it's not so much that the film is inconsequential as that it treats the consequential in a fairly inconsequential way.
Yes.
Right?
That's very well put.
I think that's very apt. I mean, this is a movie, you know, the phrase Ragnarok means the end of all things.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the setting of Ragnarok is the backdrop to this buddy comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that tells you something. There is, I mean, I really like how Thor, on the one hand, he's like trying to butter up the Hulk by saying how much he hates Banner, and then he's telling Banner how much he hates the Hulk.
Yeah.
And then at one point he's trying to get Banner to turn back into the Hulk, and he's like, no, I can't. I'm telling you, if I can't do that, like I'm gonna be stuck as Banner. And Thor's like, yeah, but you know the Hulk is good in a fight, and he's like, well, Banner's good in a fight, and Thor's just like, is he though?
Yeah, dude, Hemsworth is like a rock star in this movie. Like
he really is.
He's a great comedian. Tell my brother, there's a story in here where it seems like he was almost like improvising it, where he's talking about Loki fighting him when he was a little kid.
Yeah.
And he's just like, and then he came up and he stabbed me. He's like, it's me. And it just felt improvisy.
Right.
But he completely sells how funny that is.
Right.
And I was like, that joke worked because of Chris Hemsworth.
Oh, absolutely.
Like on paper, I didn't think that joke was that funny, but like the way that he told it and sold it was very funny.
He's like, he turned into a snake because he knew I love snakes. And then I picked up the snake and he's like, it's me.
Yeah. I'm stabbing you. It was really funny.
Oh, man. Let's talk about some spoilers.
Okay. Wait. Real quick. One more thing. All right. I was going to talk about Goldblum.
Brian, we'll talk about this on the other side.
Let's do it. Spoilers.
All right, Brian, tell me about Goldblum.
Goldblum
was playing Goldblum in this.
Yes, I was going to say, I love that Goldblum manages to be Goldblum without wearing out Goldblum. I was like, I don't know that I'm going to get tired of this. Like, right. I really, every time it came back to him, I loved, he just keeps finding new ways to Goldblum. the very first moment when it introduces him, and he's talking for like 3 minutes or something. Yeah. I literally had tears in my eyes.
Oh.
I was laughing so hard. And I just really loved what he did, what he added to the movie.
Oh, it was great. It was like Jeff Goldblum to the side commenting on the movie.
Yes. They didn't overdo it, to their credit. Yeah. They could have added so much more of him throughout. Sort of like how they screwed up that one Kat Dennings character in Thor 2.
Yes.
Where she's kind of on the edge of being annoying in the first one, and then she's like full-blown annoying in the second one. It was just the right amount of Goldblum.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Which, that should be like his music of like smooth jazz.
Just the right amount of Goldblum?
Just the right amount of Goldblum.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the back and forth where we have the sort of the very 1980s style Sakaar, with even the music that plays is you know, it's Mark Mothersbaugh and it's very synth heavy. And then we go to Asgard and it's very, I mean, it's Asgard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was at times kind of jarring going back and forth.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah.
It didn't shake me off. So it was kind of like you had to sort of mentally reset. But then again, I mean, it's not like Kate Blanchett is like doing Shakespeare in the Park while they're having fun over there. I mean, she was hamming it up.
I really liked her.
I have such a crush on Kate Blanchett in this movie.
Me
oh my
too.
Goodness.
I'm glad I'm not alone on that. I wasn't going to bring it up. But yeah, I had this weird crush on her during this movie. And she's playing this like evil.
Right.
Whatever. Yeah, like she looks like she's having a good time.
She's having fun. I like that Carl Urban. Like I when I saw Carl Urban in this, first of all, I'm like, oh, awesome, Carl Urban, because that's how you're supposed to react when you see Carl Urban in anything.
Yeah.
But I was worried that it was going to be kind of just like he's just the henchman. But I actually like that even within that, they gave him an actual arc.
Yes. Yeah. That's kind of what I was alluding to before spoilers. I really liked his arc in Valkyrie.
Yes. Tessa Thompson.
Yes.
We should mention her. Yeah.
I think I lost a little bit of her thread during the movie just because it kind of breathed like it did. But when it came to the end and she returned to her world and she was fighting for it and whatnot, like I was like, this is satisfying. I really like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do find it amusing that apparently Valkyrie is LGBT.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, and she was commenting like that maybe they trimmed a scene or something, right, where it was alluded to a little more strong. I mean, because it's not alluded to at all in the film.
I know. I'm like, you know what? You don't get to say she's LGBT based on what's in this movie.
No? Right, right. I mean, I think she was sort of alluding that was her intention, right? Like that's how she was playing it, but it's not necessarily featured.
Yeah.
Yeah.
like I don't think Disney gets to take a bow for that one is what I'm saying.
Oh,
you know?
No.
Disney's like, we're so inclusive. Look, like,
right,
okay.
Right.
That's like saying Thor is gay. Like what? Based on what? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mentioned Mark Ruffalo. I think one of the biggest laughs in the theater is his big triumphant moment where he's about to turn into the Hulk at the end. And he does not.
Yes. That was speaking of subversion. Like I did not see that coming. That was like the perfect. Because they did set it up like they had been setting up the jokes throughout, but I completely fell for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They did, right? You can sort of see it coming because of the way he delivers the line.
Yeah.
I do, by the way, when they're on the ship and they can't find any weapons, they're like, oh, this is the Grandmaster's pleasure. He just uses it for orgies. And Thor's like, don't touch anything.
Yeah.
I mean, there are so many genuine laughs. I have to really give it up to Taika Waititi. I think that, like, the movie could have become a self-parody.
Yes, yes.
It could very easily have tipped over. And so in that sense, I have to give it up to Kevin Feige.
Mm.
For being, you know, the grandmaster of these movies, you
right.
know? Because I think he has the sense to know how far to let directors sort of follow their muse and when to sort of pull things back. I mean, I think these movies, it's less like individual movies than it is a TV series.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have individual directors who come in and do individual installments, but it's still the executive producer who's big picture. The showrunner is Kevin Feige.
Yeah. And they ultimately all feel comfortable standing next to one another.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, something you've mentioned in the past is that you sometimes blanch at sort of the tie-ins that these movies have to the broader universe. And I was curious what you thought of the Doctor Strange scene, because it does feel kind of tossed in there.
I was going to say it felt entirely unnecessary.
Right.
I don't even know why it was there, to be honest.
I wonder. Yeah. I mean, the only thing I can think of is to show that in the time since his own movie, he's like fully assumed his role.
Yeah. Which I didn't. I mean, I don't care ultimately that it was there. But it. So like on first viewing, you're like, oh, OK, he's here now and they're interacting and whatever. But I think on subsequent viewings, it'll be like you could almost hit chapter skip. And
you just skip right past it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, Anthony Hopkins, it very interesting that they bowed him out of the movie so quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. It, that was a good, by the way, I didn't, I was like, why is he behaving like this at the beginning? Right. Like, I didn't immediately assume what was going on with Loki.
Oh, okay.
Did you?
Oh, that's funny. Well, I mean, I knew because at the end of the last movie, he's...
Oh, see, I don't even remember.
You don't remember? No. Because the last movie literally ends with us finding out that Loki has taken Odin's place.
Actually, this is kind of funny. I kind of feel like my dad with this series, with other movies, where he's like, yeah, totally, I like these movies, but it's like he doesn't think about them or remember what happened in the last one. You know what I mean? But he'll be there for the next one. I think that's kind of how I feel about these Marvel movies.
You know what's funny, though, is yeah, I mean, especially the second Thor, I haven't watched it once since it was in theater. So I kind of had to do like a skip through it. But the stuff that I watched, I'm glad I did, because like that play that they're watching, it's like a parody of a similar scene in that where Loki is dying. There's a scene in Thor the Dark World where Thor thinks Loki is dying.
Right, right.
And it's doing, and it's funny, my kid, he leans over, he's like, Matt Damon.
Wait, what?
But, you know, Matt Damon plays Loki in that scene.
What?
Wait, you didn't notice that?
Really?
Yeah, the guy who plays Loki. Oh, that's so funny. I just assumed you knew that. Yeah, the guy who plays Loki in that play, that's Matt Damon.
I did not get that at all.
How funny.
Holy cow. I totally did not get that.
Now you can pay attention today when you see it.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. I feel like Owen Wilson.
He's
wow.
Rewatching it today, folks. Yeah. And the guy who plays Odin in the play, do you recognize him, right?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, that's Sam Neill.
I saw that he was in this movie, and I was like, yeah. Where? Oh, man. I didn't pick up on that at all.
I mean, literally, my kid leans over, Matt Damon. Like, how do you know who Matt Damon is? You know?
Wow. That's really impressive.
It's really funny.
I have to say, I really did. I'll never get tired of the Thor Loki thing. I really love their.
I love their relationship. I don't know about you, but I always keep hoping that Loki won't be Loki.
Yeah, and you'd think that would wear itself out by now, but no, he still has his moments where he lends a hand and you're like, yeah, but then he, you know, always sort of goes back to being who he is. And
but you know what it is? I mean, I'll tell you why. I think what Hiddleston has done is given him enough pathos where you believe, like when they go to see Thor, when they go to see Odin in the beginning, like Loki cares about Odin.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it's interesting. He didn't kill Odin. He put him in an old folks home.
Right, right.
You know, and little stuff like that, I think, makes him a richer character.
Yeah. And I loved some of my favorite moments in the film. Like, one of them was when Thor's in that warrior prison holding place, and he's throwing rocks at Loki because he's a hologram. And then at the end, when he throws the bottle top at him, assuming it's just a hologram again, and he catches it, Loki catches the cap. I was like, oh,
it's
that's
a nice payoff.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, while we're talking about the warrior place, we should mention the character Korg.
Oh, he was, I don't even know how to describe that guy. He was so great.
So he's voiced by Taika Waititi.
Yeah.
And it's very funny because he's this, I mean, he looks like the Thing basically from Fantastic Four, but he just kind of talks like that, man.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you want to do here? We're about to take the ship. You want to come with us?
He was so – he was fun. He was really fun.
He was lovable.
Yeah.
Now Thor does lose his hammer in this one. That's kind of – this is something I did like. I like that by the end of the movie, they have moved the ball forward. It's not – they haven't just sort of wound things back to some the semblance of the status quo. I mean, Asgard does not exist anymore.
Yeah, pretty bold. And I kind of liked it. The whole, you know, Asgard isn't a place, it's a people. I like that.
I think it's a good payoff. I think that it's – I said this in my review that taken together, these three movies, it does feel like a culmination because the first movie is about how Thor is about to get the throne and he's not yet worthy. And then it ends – the trilogy ends with him ascending to the throne.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, nice.
You know, and he has the eye patch just like his father. I mean, it feels like, again, they've moved – I do think it's funny though that like he's – he's fighting Hela, Kate Blanchett, at the end, and then he has his vision of Odin, and basically it's like Spaceballs. He's like, use the Schwartz. He's like, I can't, I don't have the ring. He's like, forget the ring, I got it in a Cracker Jack box. That's basically what Odin says.
Yeah.
The Schwartz is within you, you know, and then he and then Led Zeppelin starts playing.
Yeah. Which, that's my favorite Led Zeppelin song, so I was happy to hear that like three times throughout the movie.
Yeah, they busted it out a bunch. I had a lot of fun with this. It's it leaves us in a place where, like, the mid-credit scene where we see the ship overtaking theirs, and we've been told that that's in fact Thanos' ship. It's made me, for the first time, I would say, genuinely like, oh, what's going to happen in Infinity War? Which I think I've told you before, that's probably the one I've been least, like, enthused about.
Why is that?
Just because I just see it being a bunch of special effects.
Yeah.
And that's not, you know, like what is, like, if you tell me, oh yeah, like Thanos takes a planet and he like drops it on these people's heads, like, I can see what that's going to look like in my head.
Yeah. And you probably won't feel anything.
Right. And, you know, I've said before, like, for me, what I loved about Captain America Civil War was not the big scene where all those superheroes are fighting against each other. That's fun. But to me, what gave it heart was the moment at the end where where Captain America and Iron Man are fighting each other, and Cap like lifts his shield up like he's about to bring it down, and Tony like covers his face.
Mm-hmm.
Like he thinks he's going to kill him. And to me, I think I've said this to you before, like, I just love that kind of a moment because it drives home the intimate stakes that are much more interesting to me.
Yes, I feel the same way.
You know, so that's when I see something like Infinity War, I think there's like the fanboy thing of like, oh, look, it's Doctor Strange and Spider-Man and Drax and what, like, you know, we're going to see all of them. That's cool. But I mean, let's be honest, if you're gaving all these characters in it, you're going to see them for a few seconds at a time. And like, I don't know, you know, I'm ready to be proven wrong because I think the Russo brothers are, if anybody's earned it, it's them.
Yeah, for sure.
But. When I look at next year's three Marvel movies, we got Black Panther in February. I'm excited for that because it's something new. I'm excited for Ant-Man in June or July, whenever that is, because I love the first Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Infinity War, I'm excited for it because I'm excited for all these Marvel movies. But of those three, I would say that's like third of three.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, and maybe I'm certainly happy to prove him wrong. That doesn't mean I'm saying it's going to suck, just to be very clear. I'm just I know what I'm probably going to get from it, and that's fine, but it's not, you know, there isn't as much the thrill of the new.
Yes. Maybe that's what
The thrill of the new, right? And I think we've been building up to Thanos now since like 2012. I almost feel like what can measure up to all the expectations too.
Yeah. Well, so, and then I also wanted to revisit this real fast. Yeah, the thing with Thor, and, you know, basically his bones are made of rubber and he can, you know, not get killed. But then it's like his eyeball is like his one weak spot. I was like, eh. Like, just, well, because none of them seemed vulnerable to begin with. I was like,
well, I mean, so this is how, maybe I'm just like, maybe I'm like seeking explanations, but I was just like, she used like some Asgardian sword on him. Maybe that's just what they're vulnerable to.
So if she had driven that sword into him, he could have died.
Well, clearly, because I mean, look at all them people that she killed on the planet, right? I mean,
yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's, I don't know.
That's the one thing I'm sort of missing from these films, I think, is just feeling any moments of peril with our heroes.
But see, again, I feel like that's specific to these superpowered characters as opposed to the human ones.
Wait, what do you mean?
Like, I mean, you see it with, like, not super, like, overpowered, like the Hulk or Thor. I mean, that's sort of, that's the cost of admission. It's like saying, what's Superman's vulnerability? Like, the reason he has kryptonite, I mean, Thor and Superman are comparable, is what I'm saying.
I see. Yeah, Yeah.
Like, that's what I would say. And Superman is vulnerable to magic in the same way a regular person is. So if he got jabbed in the eye with a magic sword the way Thor did, he'd be one-eyed Jake too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, and yeah. It's really the emotional stuff. Like you were saying with Iron Man and Captain America and that, like, that's the stuff.
Yeah.
And to its credit, the fact that they have gotten us there now, and that's the stuff that those are the stakes we care about. That's
now when we talk about stakes, this was a thought that I had. I do feel like the characters, the three warriors from the previous films, played by Zachary Levi and Ray Stevenson, they get like wiped off the plate like almost instantly.
Yeah,
and I was there was a little bit of me that I was like, man, at least give him like a farewell, you know, give him something.
Yeah, like a getting filled with arrows as I can
give him a moment. Like the third guy, that Asian guy, he at least got something.
Right, right.
But that being said, I think it's very clear that when you have Idris Elba signed to a multi-picture contract, you keep him around as long as you can.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he suddenly has a lot more to do in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah,
that feels very noticeable to me.
That's funny. I didn't even think of it that way. But I did think about when they got wiped out, just very, very, you know, brushed aside immediately. I was like, oh, all right. Well, there they go.
There they go. and there we go, because we have run out of time for our discussion about Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. It's a good time at the theater, but it's probably not something I'll think about much.
Which is pretty much Brian's like default review of Marvel Universe movies. And and I don't say that as a criticism. I think, to some extent, I think that's what Disney wants, is they want something that, you know, you're going to want to see it, you'll enjoy it, and it'll prime you for the next one.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to be there all three next year for sure.
There you go. And even if we didn't have a show to do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of being there, just because we have a show to do, our next episode, we'll be talking about Justice League.
Wow. It's here.
It's here. It's finally here.
Yeah.
And soon it will not be here. It'll be in the past tense.
As with all things.
As with all things, yeah. So that's going to be our next episode, but we do have something fun lined up between now and then, which I'll let it drop, and you guys can see what that's going to be. But anything that you want to hype up for the audience before we take off for this one?
Yeah, in between shows, I have a job, and I work for a show called Puppy Dog Pals, which airs on Disney Junior, and it's a great little show about dogs that go on adventures for kids, and I think you should check it out.
I agree, people. I think you should check it out. It's a good one. As for me, you can find me at my website, zakiscorner.com. That's Z-A-K-I-S corner. That's also my Twitter. That's also my Instagram. You can also find me at the Huffington Post, where my movie reviews go up regularly, as does this show, as does the Nostalgia Theater Show. Speaking of the Nostalgia Theater Show, a new episode just dropped last week featuring my interview with Danny Bilson, the co-creator of the 1990 The Flash TV series, which aired for one season on CBS.
I remember it. Very well. Yeah. I didn't even know it was just one season.
He also co-wrote The Rocketeer from 1991. So we talked about both of those, and I think it's made for a fun conversation. I actually had this discussion with him about a year ago, right around the time Captain America Civil War came out, actually. And I've been the nice thing about the Nostalgia Theater Show is that you can sort of bank episodes,
mm-hmm.
and because they are timeless conversations. So I think you will enjoy this one.
Yeah, I already have it downloaded. I can't wait to listen.
Awesome. Also, if you're looking for more from me, I am on the Discovery Debrief podcast hosted by Chris Clow. Every week we look at the new episode of Star Trek Discovery that just dropped. Our most recent episode, we talked about Anthony Rapp, who is on the show, on the Star Trek show, not on our podcast, but he is on Star Trek, and that allowed for him to have a greater voice when he talked about what happened with Kevin Spacey. So we did talk a little bit about that. And as I say each and every episode, please go to iTunes and leave a review, leave a star rating. Every little bit helps. We appreciate all the feedback that you give us. And if you would like to get in touch with us, you can email us at moviefilmpodcast@gmail.com. You can also hit like on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviefilmpodcast. And that wraps up this episode. We've been talking for a long time. I've been sitting on my butt. It's a little Thor.
Nice. I like that.
Thank you. Thank you. And we will catch you next time. Thanks, everybody.
That was really funny.
Well,
friends